This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 492. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am flying solo today. You're listening to me on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. I bet you know this, but we stream this live at koop.org. You better stay right here and listen, because it's Turkey Day, and we're on Offstage and On the Air. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Every night I lie in bed.
It is Wednesday, November 21st. And on the show today, we have the Austin Playhouse and their production of The Mystery of Edwin Drood, or just Drood. And of course, we will have lively discussions of the world of theater in Chicago, in Austin, in Boston, and all the things that rhyme with stin. We'll be right back. Dun ta da! I love it when I time things that end right at the end of my announcement. It doesn't happen often, but it happened this time. Actually, I chose it that way. So, this is Lisa Sheps flying solo today. Nicole Shiro is not doing too well today, so our love and our hearts and our goodwill go out to her. We're sending her lots of positive energy so that she can rally and be ready to go for Thanksgiving and eat some turkey. If I'm asked very nicely, I might sing at least part of my Thanksgiving song later on today. But I'd have to be asked very nicely because I'm kind of shy. Kim Simpson in the International Folk Bazaar, what a great job he did, and I'm very, very happy that. We do have a lovely full studio here, and so let's talk about who's here in the studio with us. We have Rick Romer. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Lisa.
And we have Jill Blackwood.
Hello. Good to see you, Lisa.
It's been forever.
It's been a long time.
What the hey?
What the hey?
What the hey?
What the hey? I'm
and Marie Falgren. Hi, Marie.
Hello. Hi, Lisa.
And Lynn Kennington. Oh, my God. Why do I have trouble with... Yeah. So here, you should lift that microphone up and just get as close as you can, and if you ever want to speak.
I'm going to ask you very nicely
you
to
are.
Sing, Lisa.
I know. It actually... So it's a little... It's not very politically correct, but it starts like this. Gobble, 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 gobble. I don't like Thanksgiving Day. And he gets his head chopped off. So that goes out to my very dear friend, the late Dean Driver, who is a wonderful orchestrator and composer himself. So did y'all hear that that song? Did anybody recognize that song that I played at the very opening?
I was trying to place it, but I didn't.
Well, it's from The Greatest Showman.
Oh!
But it's not... it's not who you think it is. That was Pink singing.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. Pink with an exclamation point. So it is a tribute. I love tribute albums. So they just released a tribute album with The Greatest Showman and Pink, Kesha, and some other lots of popular people that I don't know are singing all the songs. And it's
I
really
hear
quite
word
nice.
That they're going to turn that into a Broadway musical.
Yeah, we did discuss that. And I only wish that Nicole was here because unlike the rest of the world, she hated the film. I loved it. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was vehemently opposed to it. And she's a huge Hugh Jackman fan. So, but that is, that was... from The Greatest Showman, and of course I keep forgetting the names of things. It's called A Million Dreams, and they have two versions of the big anthem. I don't know, Being Who You Are, whatever it's called, the one that What's Her Name sang. I don't know anybody's name, so never mind. So forget that. So we had some openings on The Great White Way this week while we were gone this week. So one was The Prom. So, so Lynn Koenig is very excited.
My friend Natasha Davison is one of the producers of The Prom, and well, she's getting great reviews.
It's getting really good reviews. Wasn't super raised, but all very good, and it's probably going to have a long life, which is great because it was kind of a sleeper.
And they'll be performing on Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow.
They will, but they're not in the CBS. They're on the NBC version, which is live, which is great. It's just better than the CBS. CBS has things like King Kong
and
in
the
it.
High tomorrow in New York is 26.
Ouch. One year I went to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I happened to have tickets, but it was one of those freezing cold things, and it was not fun. Anyway, the prom opened last Thursday, I believe, at the Long Acre Theater. Jesse Green called it a joyful hoot.
Fun fact, two of the musicians in the pit didn't make it to the show that night because of the snowstorm, and they had two subs in the pit, and the awesome music director talked them through the whole thing.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I'll tell you what, musicians, I knew a lot of pit players, and I knew a lot of people that would sub, and they would come in. I'm just amazed that they come in the day of, they get talked through a few things, and then they play the show. Yeah, I don't have that kind of talent. So I was actually surprised. Of course, I've been hearing about the prom. I've been talking about it. And I was, when I read the review, or the Times review, the plot was a little different than what I thought. I knew it concerned a woman who was told that she could not bring her same-sex date to the prom. But the overarching story is about a flop show, that is looking to try to re-energize themselves, and they decide to try to hook onto an issue. And they found this one, and they decided to come into this little town and change things up and try to get things going. They call celebrity activism, which if Nicole Shiro was here, she'd be saying artivism. That's what she likes to call that. But it talks about Dee Dee and Barry are the main characters, Beth Level and Brooks Ashkamakis.
Oh, I didn't know Beth Level.
Ashmankus. I can never pronounce the name. Anyway, I'll just call him Brooks. Yeah, Beth Level's in it.
I didn't realize that.
See? And
that's
here's
a major selling point.
Here's a picture of the lesbian couple that's in the Times. Here, I'll show it to everybody in the house.
Okay. Some people might know Beth Level as the drowsy chaperone.
Yes, she was indeed the drowsy chaperone and won a Tony for it, if I believe.
And she came here to do cabaret back in March, which I saw, which was fabulous.
She did? Where?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, cabaret. Oh, the Austin Cabaret Theater.
Yeah, Austin Cabaret Theater. Yeah.
I was about to say, no. What role did she play?
No, she wasn't in cabaret, but I saw her cabaret show.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it, and I tried.
Oh, it was fabulous.
Stuart was not answering. Stuart Moulton, the original co-host of Offstage and On the Air, was not answering my email. Stuart Moulton. Anyway, this has a book by Bob Martin and Chad Begullion. Songs by Chad Begullion, who did the lyrics, and Matthew Sklar did the music. And again, the reviews were good, not super duper great, but I think good enough for a nice, long, wonderful tour. Not tour, life. Run. Thank you, Lynn.
Tour is where they end up usually.
Yeah. And then a tour.
So I do need to say this to anybody that we do our own peer reviews. So I have my cohorts here at Co-op might be listening to this show, and they will write a review on how I did things. So if you are one of those reviewers, the reason why Lynn sounds so faint is not because of me. It's because she's far away from the microphone and we cannot get her closer. So don't give me a bad review because of that.
Please don't.
So I've never heard costumes referred to as hilarious before, but these costumes by Ann Roth are called hilarious. They're actually by Ann Roth and Matthew Pacman. And it just sounds like a lot of fun. Lynn, have you seen it?
I have not had the pleasure of seeing it, but I plan to.
Because I know Laura Galt-Snively is involved with it.
Yes,
you see
yes.
A lot of tweets and things from her. Mm-hmm. So I know they're all really, really excited. So some of the other reviews, Deadline's Greg Evans says, the songs are more than clever and entertaining enough, sometimes laugh out loud funny, other times moving. Oh, I should have said Casey Nicholaw is the director. Nicholaw's choreography and choreographer. Nicholaw's choreography, especially the Broadway pastiche stuff, is a treat. The Rap's Robert Hoffler said, director Casey Nicholaw knows precisely what to do with his four ham actors. With its kinetic dancing, broad mugging, and belty anthems, it makes you believe in musical comedy again. That's a great.
Yeah, musically, I'll just jump in. Although I haven't heard it, I have read that, you know, because it's this world, Broadway, old school world meets new contemporary. Matthew has done, they've done a lot of great music. There's pastiche and there's also contemporary. Mm-hmm. So there's a little something for you know, it's an all ages kind of thing, music, and it's a little bit like Drowsy Chaperone, a little throwback to the old days, right. But then plenty of contemporary stuff.
And explain to folks what pastiche is for those that don't know it.
Written in a style from before, and we've got some pastiche in our show, by the way.
Of course you do. So yeah, pastiche is it's given homage to a different style, but set to more. It's different from a satire or different from just a reboot of what it. Anyway, I want to go see this show.
Yeah. Well, I do too.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go. Let's go right now.
Okay.
All right. There it is. So the next review I want to talk about is a show that we cannot see because it's already opened and closed. But I've never heard of this show. It's called A Chorus Line.
Michael McDonald did the costumes.
Who works here?
I didn't realize that. They used Theona Aldridge's originals, yes. I thought. So sort of redid it. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. Awesome. Because this was, we talked about this the other week. This is Bjork Lee. And what's his name? Why did I just lose his name? Avion. Bob Avion. My Lord. My head is a sieve. So this is part of City Center's 75th anniversary. Right. And this was basically taking the old Chorus Line and plopping it right down on stage. And the critics sort of were iffy about some of the things not necessarily making it to contemporary times. Loved it because it's hard not to love this. And the interesting thing that they talk about, the character of Cassie and the director, Zach, who's played by Tony Yazbek. You only see him mostly as a disembodied voice of God, we like to call it. And so we have Cassie, who is trying to try out for the chorus, but she had made fame, and she's sort of stepping back to try to be in the chorus, and he's trying to say, no, you're too good for the chorus, which is weird. I never really thought of this before, but the whole thing about Chorus Line is it's about members of the chorus stepping out to get consideration. And then the main story, the biggest storyline, I should say, is about this director, Zach, who was modeled after Michael Bennett himself, is telling Cassie, no, you can't go back to the chorus because you have reached this level of stardom.
She needed a job. She needed work.
She did need a job. And we'll do anything to get a job. Or to, you know, do anything meaning I'll
do the chorus.
Anyway, I just thought that was a very interesting thing. So we missed it, but maybe it'll come back to it. Who here loves Chorus Line?
Yes, I do.
Anybody see the first incarnation?
No.
No, I did. I saw the very first national tour.
Okay.
In San Francisco.
So I moved to New York in 77. It opened in 75. It closed, I think, in 85, something like that. It ran for 10 years. I saw it like 2 months before it closed, for the very first time. Never saw it before that. And it was a little tired by that time. Anyway, so that's a good story. I've got many more just like it. The Big Apple Circus just opened again. And, you know, the Big Apple Circus closed for a while. Big Apple Circus has
been around for a long time.
And then it closed and it had some controversy. Hold on. Whenever we have controversy, I like to do this. Okay, those of you without headphones couldn't hear that, but that was a boom, boom. But it had controversy, yeah. Whereas the clown, I forgot his name, he was with him from forever. He was like their main clown. Was a sexual predator. And because of the Me Too movement, he is no longer. And is now replaced by a juggler guy who they just loved in this. But I love this review, which was written by Alexis Solisky. She kept talking about her date, who was a child, that was saying things, telling her things that she had to put in the review. But here's a picture of a little poodle driving a car.
That's cute.
But the Big Apple Circus is really great. It's been around for long. It's always in a tent. It's got that small town circus kind of feel to it that's so great. And then I loved how they talk about this, and I didn't note it in the article I have here, so I'm not gonna be able to find it. But they talked about they have a lot of animal acts, which are not necessarily a good thing these days. But these animals live with the trainer. And they're never retired, and they're her pets. And there's a potbelly pig, some miniature horses, and evidently the potbelly pig. Okay, so I'm going to read this. So they said, the Big Apple Circus is wholesome family entertainment. It is good-hearted and pleasure-minded. The acts don't overstay their welcome. Honestly, that pig could have stayed forever. They love the potbelly pig. Anyway, Big Apple Circus. Time to go see that. And so now, here's the thing I really want to talk about. Lifetime of a Fact. It's playing on Broadway right now, and it's the one with Daniel Radcliffe, Cherry Jones, and Bobby Cannavale. Mm-hmm. And it deals with a fact checker. And so in our day and age, and I should say before I say this, the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not that of Co-op, the Board of Directors, or the staff, but are only of my own. The producers wrote a little letter to our president. And rather than just go through the story, I'm going to read this letter in full. Is that okay?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Dear Mr. President, we, the producers of the new Broadway play, The Lifespan of a Fact, now playing at the world-famous Studio 54 Theater, cordially invite you to attend the upcoming performance of your choosing. Yes, you read that correctly. We want you to come to our Broadway play. We actually think it's vital that you do. Before you crumble this piece of paper up and throw it into the wastebasket behind the Resolute desk, let us give you an overview of the plot of the play. We think it'll pique your interest. A determined young fact checker, Daniel Radcliffe, is about to stir up trouble, period. His demanding editor, Cherry Jones, has given him a big assignment. Apply his skill to a groundbreaking piece of by an unorthodox author, Bobby Cannavale. Together, they take on the high-stakes world of publishing in this new comedy of conflict. The ultimate showdown between fact and fiction is about to begin with undeniably delicious consequence. That phrase, ultimate showdown between fact and fiction, sticks out to us because we, sir, believe that is a phrase that could be used to describe your current tenure as Commander-in-Chief. And while we respect how you like to change facts to create alternative facts, we invite you to spend 90 minutes with us to face this hot-button issue head-on, in the dark, in a theater of all places. Additionally, on the campaign trail in 2016, you promised the American people that you would create jobs. Well, not a single fact checker working today can say that you didn't do that, because they really have you to thank for their jobs. Maybe you were imagining factory jobs or construction jobs. Hey, a job's a job. Come see our play and you'll see the story about real-life fact checkers doing the type of work people do for you and about you every day. It might even help you and your team fact check stories you read about yourself from the fake news media. So, and then there's just a closing paragraph.
Do they really
paragraph.
Think that he's going to come to the show after that letter?
God, no. God, no. But I mean, it's great publicity, yeah, but I just think it's kind of funny. So, yeah. Anybody else think he'll come?
No.
But they did talk about in the article that they talk about the issue at Hamilton when Pence went to Hamilton was spoken to by the cast of Hamilton, and also I believe Ivanka got something happened to her when she went to go see something. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, I wanted to share it with everybody.
Wasn't this also the show that has like the full female design team that the New York Times just did an article
yes.
about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, they're pretty pretty awesome.
Bring it on. Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay, and then let's talk about King Kong. We talked about this last week when it opened, but the headline of this article is "Critics Beat Up King Kong, But Producers Aren't Pulling the Plug." So it got pretty well ravaged by the critics in the Times. And as we talked, the New York Times, or not only in the Times, in the whole media, the New York Times did one of their conversations between Ben Brantley and Jesse Green, and their comments were, God, you don't want to be panned by one New York Times critic, much less two at the same time. But the producers of this have a lot of money, and it seems like they plan to keep it open. And it's doing decent houses, and they're planning on saying, to heck with the theater elite, and to heck with the critics. It's the tourists we want to bring in here to see this big mammoth puppet that Nicole saw and just loved the puppet. I've heard conflicting things, but the puppet was pretty amazing. And we were talking about this before the show about what producers can and can't do about keeping things open. My one and only Broadway experience was we were panned by the critics and lasted 3 days. We could not survive without the critics. So what do y'all think of the producers keeping King Kong open?
Well, I mean, if they've got the money. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I always look at it as like Las Vegas gone east. I mean, it's such a visual spectacle. It's driven by spectacle. And that's what people want. They want mm-hmm. spectacle. It's like, it's almost review proof to a certain degree. I mean, there's other shows like that that have gotten mediocre, not as bad as King Kong, but mediocre reviews, and they're still running. Spider-Man ran for a very long time, even all the Julie Taymor controversy, and it ran for a long time.
It did.
It's review proof. I mean, and so, I mean, yeah, if it satisfies the tourists, I mean, I guess that's what drives them.
Yeah, yeah, and it's money. But go ahead, Lynn.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, can you hear me? Can you hear
yes,
me
I can.
I would love to direct the listeners to a review on Vulture.com by Sarah Holdren, uh-huh. which is a really well-articulated commentary and essay, more than a review, on the idea that I'm just going to paraphrase that the very thing that King Kong, the story, sort of rails against or speaks to the commercialism of,
yeah.
you know, making this thing, you know, commercializing right. a being or a, you know, is
an ape, we like to
thank
call
you.
It.
is like it's the thing that it's glorifying, but it's saying we shouldn't glorify it itself as a vehicle of art is glorifying.
Right.
Like
right.
the spectacle, yep. not the substance.
Well, also, right. it's like, you know, I just got back from Broadway, I mean, New York about a year ago, and the shows that are review-proof usually are based on movies. Frozen, mm-hmm. Mean Girls, mm-hmm. King Kong, certainly based on a very famous movie, if not remakes of movies. And it's, so that's what drives it, I think. It doesn't need to be reviewed well.
Well, it doesn't need to, but I mean, if you take this particular case, they have a $700,000 capitalization, so they have to make $700,000 each week in order to break even. They are making currently $900,000, which only leaves $200,000 to pay off the investors of the highest costing musical on Broadway currently.
Are there any stars in it?
No.
Yeah, they don't need them.
Well, they don't.
But that's not where the money's spent.
Their target audience is not the same people who. Are going to see the more
no
classic
but Rick,
shows
let me just
or
say
even read reviews. Right. They're not
right.
going to
right. I admit that there is a star in the show.
The ape?
King Kong.
Yeah. Plus, that's why I mean I am sure the actors are making minimum because they don't have to pay.
Right,
them.
But still they're not making enough money right now to pay off their investors. So they're making enough money to pay their bills, but they're not paying enough money to make money on
the show.
Well,
they're making their nut, and that's so they're in for the long haul then.
Yeah,
in order to pay back mm-hmm. investors. Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. So here's what I love. Have y'all heard of this FX TV show that's going to happen called Fosse Verdon?
No.
Yes. So it is somebody, a producer by the name of Lin-Manuel Miranda, along with Thomas Kail and Stephen Levinson, and starring Sam Rockwell as Bob Fosse and Michelle Williams as Gwen Verdon,
wow.
are doing a 7-week or 7-series episode about. These theater legends. And listen to this cast. So they've got, hold on. So Rockwell's Fosse, Verdon is, Michelle Williams is Verdon. Norbert Leo Butts is Patty Chayefsky. And Margaret Qualley is Anne Reinking. Bianca Mariquin, who I don't know, as Cheetah Rivera. Kelly Barrett is going to play Liza Minnelli. Ethan Slater, who's in SpongeBob. He's going to play Joel Grey. Laura Osnes is Shirley MacLaine. Byron Jennings is George Abbott. And it just goes on. Nate Cordry from Saturday Night Live, I guess. No, not Saturday, The Daily Show, I guess, is going to be Neil Simon. So it sounds just amazing.
Wow, that would be intimidating to play some of those stars who are still around.
I was
around.
Thinking that exact same
I would
thing.
Be
that
so,
is
intimidating.
So intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to be on FX. It's going to be in the spring of 2019, and I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about it on offstage and on the air. It looks like a lot of fun, too.
Yeah,
yeah. And, of course, it's got Lin-Manuel Miranda, who can do no wrong currently, so it will be ahead there. Let me do a check of the time. So we just have time for a few more things. Let me decide what I want to talk about. You know what? Let's just talk very... Oh, there is a... I should talk about this. So there's going to be a... And again, this is kind of spectacle, similar to what Rick was talking about before. Chicago is going to be doing a national search, and it's going to be on television for a new Roxy. So they're doing a national casting call. People will send their tapes in. They'll choose three finalists, and there'll be a whole thing on TV about those three finalists duking it out for Roxy.
That show's been there forever.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's the longest running right now. And it's a revival. That's not even the original.
Well, it was based on a very, very inexpensively produced production that moved to Broadway. It's not an expensive production. I mean, it's not Razzle Dazzle Chicago.
Well, it is Razzle Dazzle during the number Razzle Dazzle.
Yes, but you know what I mean. Yes. It's not.
Yeah. So currently, I didn't realize that Cuba, because I'm from Cuba, I pronounce Cuba. Cuba Gooding Jr. is in it currently now.
Really?
Billy Flynn. I did not know that. And then the final thing is there's a whole article in the New York Times. You can see it if you go to offstageonair.com, and there'll be a click to the link. Is a whole thing about trigger warnings and how all the theaters have outside the door that different things are going to happen. So we're all pretty much accustomed to seeing things when we have strobe lights, things that have some real medical issues. Cigarettes are being used, and these are, I always thought, were sort of mandated that you had to do by whatever municipality said that if you're going to have cigarette smoking, these you had to. But this is saying it's happening voluntarily now, and it's doing a lot. It's in a world where we expect to not be surprised about things. So if it's got sexual violence, or if rape is portrayed, or any kind of anything that they think might trigger anybody, there'll be a long list. And it's actually controversial. A lot of theater artists are saying, and I don't know where I sit on the controversy right now, but a lot of theater artists are saying it's part of the thing about theater is the surprise and the visceral nature of what you want theater to do. And if you're giving things away, spoilers, that it might take a little bit away from that. And other people are saying, but we don't want to screw people up.
I'd be willing to bet that it's also the producers involved for the liability issues.
Right, of course, absolutely. But I like one. I think my favorite approach is one theater has a note in the program. If you are concerned about anything that might happen, please go to this website.
And well, it seems they could solve some of that by informative press releases. I mean,
well, but you don't want to, if you have if you have a show like Death Trap or some of these suspenseful things that have a murder that happens at the end of Act One that's supposed to shock and surprise. If you say there's going to be a murder at the end of Act One, it's meant to surprise and shock you. That sort of gives that away. Right. I don't know.
Almost like it needs to be rated, like rated R player, PG-13 player.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree with that.
That
if you're giving something away, that's part of the storytelling of the play or musical. Yeah. Then you are giving it away, and you're doing the exact opposite of what the intent of the playwright was. Right.
Well, one might argue also that the intent of the production, i.e. the director, whoever's putting it, might have also some of those surprises that they want the people sitting in the audience to have some visceral emotion. Yeah. That if you give those away, it's not necessarily a plot.
That's why I think it's the producers behind it all.
It might be.
For the liability issues.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Getting amongst sued other for things. A heart attack or whatever. I mean,
well, you know. True, true. We live in a very litigious society.
We do. So. And I'm going to sue you for saying that on my show. We're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to hear. So have y'all heard of the Hamel Drop?
Nope.
Okay. So Hamel Drop is this thing that they've been doing since Hamilton opened, where they bring out different music, and it's called a Hamel Drop. And so this is Lin-Manuel Miranda singing something that John Kander wrote called Cheering For Me Now. It's a video which you can see on the link at offstageonair.com, but this is the music for it that we'll be listening to right now. We'll be right back.
Here in New York,
We are back. You're listening to Lisa Sheps on Offstage and on the Air on KOOP. Streaming live at KOOP.org. We've been having a great conversation with Jill Blackwood, Rick Romer, and Lynn Kenning, as well as Marie Falgren. And now we're going to actually switch gears and talk to those very same people about the whole reason why they're here with us today. And that is Austin Playhouse's production of Drood. But before we talk about that, so I don't have to change the subject, we're going to just skip real quick and listen to our randomly selected legal ID, and we're going to just see what that is today. So here it is.
Hi, this is Sandra Bernhardt, and you're listening to Offstage on the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Sandra Bernhardt. I think we just heard her a few weeks ago. Anyway, The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which I just learned today. They officially renamed to Drood when they did the revival.
I didn't realize that was officially changed.
It is. I actually learned it. I looked it up on the Wikipedia page.
Gotcha.
And so The Mystery of Edwin Drood is, of course, unfinished Dickens novel, and for some reason I always want to say Nathaniel Hawthorne instead of Dickens. Whenever I think of Dickens,
it's the last one.
Very, very different. So anyway, when you look it up, you get the Dickens novel, and it says if you want the musical, you're looking in the wrong place. You got to look at Drood. So somebody tell us about The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Well, it's a play within a play, and
yes,
it's this turn of the century acting troupe. And
English Music Hall.
English Music Hall, the Music Hall Royale, and they are putting on The Mystery of Edwin Drood, and they are asking the audience to pick the ending, since Charles Dickens never wrote the ending. So there's a lot of fun, you know, melodrama, breaking the fourth wall, sort of a lot of fun stuff.
Yeah, we break the fourth wall from the very opening number, so it gives us license to do it all the way through the show, and it's very kind of, I say vaudevillian, but it's not. It's music hall, which is what the precursor to vaudeville. We get to really play it up big.
It's melodrama. It gives us license to,
Yeah, well, we all play two parts. We play the English music hall characters, and we play then the roles we play within the story of Edwin Drood.
Yeah, it's such a fun show.
It is a fun show. Rupert Holmes.
Yes, Rupert Holmes, who for many people, that name sounds familiar. He wrote the Pina Colada song.
Yes, he wrote
a lot of stuff for
Streisand.
Yeah, that was his. Did he?
Yeah.
Did not know that. Yeah. I had the honor now, but not at the time, the honor of meeting him and spending a little bit of time with him back in the 70s. So Jill Blackwood, who do you play there? Are you the titular character?
I do play Edwin Drood, but I'm also Alice Nutting, and she's sort of the diva of the troupe and the London's leading male impersonator. And so I play Edwin Drood.
And what huge shoes that you're filling if you're going. So it's Betty Buckley in the original.
And then Stephanie J. Block.
And then Stephanie J. Block.
Yes.
She was amazing, by the way. Yeah.
Yes.
So, and I have no doubt that you are equally up to the task.
She is.
Well, I don't know, but I'm having fun.
And Rick, who do you play?
I play, my English music hall character is Clive Paget, the notorious leading man of the company, and then I play John Jasper, who's the villain of the piece, where I get booed and hissed throughout the whole show. I love it. It's just loads of fun. And the cool thing is Jill and I are both reprising the roles we played 13 years ago in this show.
Yes. Oh, right. Austin Playhouse did it back then.
And 2005.
That was before the revival, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
But
the revival was, I think, 2013.
Yeah. I actually saw the very first preview at the revival at Studio 54.
Fun.
Awesome. And Lynn Kenning, what do you play?
I play Maestra Hortense Purcell.
Oh!
The band is on stage, and so we get to engage in the frivolity and fun and breaking the fourth wall as well. We have a band of five.
I should say that Lynn is not only playing, she is the musical director of the piece.
Yes, it's so much fun. These guys have been great to work with. It's an awesome cast. They sound fantastic.
I have no doubt. So you have five pieces. What's the instrumentation?
We've got reeds. We've got one person who juggles clarinet, flute, and piccolo. We've got a trumpet player who also plays flugelhorn, trombone, and a mini layered drum set, and then me on the piano.
So your reed player, while they're juggling those three instruments, are they playing them at the same time?
It's amazing.
They Anybody? Always play amazing. At least one at a time. You know, one if not more at a time.
Embouchure on that guy.
It's a whole shtick just watching him change instruments in the middle of songs.
Yeah. I will say, as an audience member for this show, it's just so much fun.
It is.
It is fun, and it's genuinely, I mean, the audience genuinely picks the ending. So they pick who the detective is, and then who the murderer is, and then also they, the chairman of the music hall decides there has to be a happy ending, so they choose who the lovers are. So all of the actors in the play have to be at the ready with all those different endings memorized.
We rehearsed, I think, 9 or 10 different endings.
Yes. Yeah. So I feel very, very lucky that I do the same show every night. Edward Drew disappears, and I don't have to...
You don't have
memorize all those different endings. So I'm very much in awe of the rest of the cast.
And my character is such the obvious choice. It said that in the play that I in Broadway he never got picked. The last one we did, he never got picked. Because I do my confession anyway. Always. I mean, I come and then they say, "Well, I won't give it away."
Yeah.
Don't
spoiler
say.
Alert.
But it is rather interesting. If you look at the soundtrack for it, you'll see all the different songs that are choices. So you could, in theory, come and see this show how many different times? Yeah. 10 different times?
Wow. I never
and see
that.
different endings? Yeah.
That's some kind of algebraic formula that we are not prepared to.
That's what we did. Yeah. We got into this business so we wouldn't have to do algebra, right, Lynn? I don't know. X equals Y. Do I have to do this? So as an audience member, it's just so much fun. I remember sitting in the audience and just being filled with excitement right before any of the performances start. So you guys are reprising the roles. I say reprise instead of reprise. Just, you know, I don't know if anybody else cares, but that's the proper way to say it.
We don't care.
You're reprising the roles that you did when you were 10 years younger than you are right now.
More than that.
Even more than 10 years. Yeah, so we're a little, a little more tired after the show than we were last time. I don't know.
And there's also Huck Huckabee, Jackie
Cross,
and Wright.
And Brian Coughlin. So there's a couple others who were in it.
Who were in the original.
And Huck is playing a different role this time.
Oh, okay.
But he's playing the chairman. Brian is playing a different role. He was Neville, and now he's playing Bazzard.
Was Jackie in the original?
Yep. Yeah, she was, and she's playing the same role, Princess Puffer.
Three of us are playing the same roles we did originally.
Mm-hmm. And was that done at the Penfield stage?
Yes, when the Playhouse was at Penfield.
So missed that. It was like, because that's like right around my house. Like it was so easy to get to.
I did too. It was very intimate.
Yeah.
It's also three quarters. I like
three quarter thrust.
Yep. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep talking for just a little while longer. So how is that for you guys to reprise the roles? Have you found? I'm going to presume that you found a whole like myriads of different layers that you didn't have.
Well,
before.
What's funny is Lynn, as our music director, one of the first things she said was, you know, I don't want us to be tied to anything you did before or whatever. And I'm thinking, it was 13 years ago. I'm pretty much a blank slate. You're working with a blank slate here.
I don't remember exactly
what it did. But there is a weird thing in your brain whenever, because this is not the first time I've done a show that I've done before. Mm-hmm. And it's like there is some kind of blueprint in there, and it's much easier just memorizing the material and sort of getting into the show. It comes really easy the second time around. Yeah. It's a little more relaxing.
Yeah, that's cool. And Don Toner is directing this time. Did he direct last time? I'm assuming he did.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm.
So that's got to be sort of fun. How was that first day of rehearsal this time? Crickets in the studio.
No, it was with Lynn. I mean, we did music for the
music
first
director.
Week.
Okay.
I said rehearsal. The first day rehearsal is always like the first day of kindergarten because it's like meeting, you know, it's like we're all so excited.
And, right, but a lot of this is like at least for the two of you and Brian and Jackie and folks, you're coming back. It's like getting the band back.
It's a fun little reunion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. And the number we're actually going to do is that's where I get the flashbacks with Jill, because that's the only time we're singing that number. We sing together in the show, mm-hmm. and I always have this flashbacks because it's like it's almost like the same choreography.
Sort of surreal in a way.
Okay, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about a little local stuff, and then we'll come back and hear a little bit of that song. And I also want to talk to Marie about what she's doing,
yes.
And that'll be fun, too. So so everybody stick around. Let's see what we're going to hear. We're going to hear a little bit of Edwin Drood, it's not the mystery of Edwin Drood in my book. It's Drood now. Mm-hmm. It's my new thing. And this is Settling Up the Score. We'll be right back. But let's talk about what's going on locally. And I have to mention, because Rick Romer is here, Doubt,
yes. Yes.
Which is getting some dynamite reviews, yeah. And was on our show last week. And that's City Theater's production playing over at Trinity Street Playhouse.
Correct.
Give us some details about that while I go look for some papers.
It was a joy to work with four actors I mean, listen, they say, you know, good directing is 50% of it is casting and a good script. And I had that.
I'm going to go with
80%. Down. Yeah, okay. I was Babs George, Joel Gross, Brooks Culbertson, and April Patterson. And it's just a phenomenal group of people to work with. And we rehearsed it for a long time, 2 months, which is very rare in this city. Just because
that is. That's a, that
because
is a long
of things
time.
That happened with the City Theater. We mm-hmm. were fortunate enough for the Trinity Theater to open up their doors for us. And it's just a powerful story. And one of the reviewers, which I really appreciated, talked about how relevant it is today with the Me Too movement and what's happening in Pennsylvania right now with the Catholic Church.
Sure.
And it's just it's a very human story, and it follows really Sister Aloysius, played by Babs George, in a stunning performance.
She's fantastic.
She is, and yep. It's her journey in a sense.
Yeah. So yeah, we had them on. We had you guys on. You weren't here last week. You weren't here, were you?
I couldn't.
Okay, guys. All of a sudden, I thought, oh my God, what if Rick was here and I just said he wasn't here? But that's Doubt. For more information on that, you can go to citytheateraustin.org. Also, I can't seem to find the piece of paper which explains what this is, but the Rude Mechs are doing this cool thing called, and I cannot pronounce it, so if somebody else can help me if you know, Gregariat Garage Art. It's a site-specific piece that they're doing. The Rude Mechs are always doing some fun stuff. You find out where it is when you... call in to purchase your tickets. More information for that at rudemix.org. So now we'll skip, if I can find the piece of paper, there it is, to today in theater history. You ready to learn what went on? Awesome. 1694, you remember this, Rick.
Thank you very much.
it is the birthday of Francois Marie Auré.
Ah.
You know who that is, right? Mm-mm. Otherwise known as Voltaire,
yes.
Who wrote a novel, Candide. There was a 1956 Leonard Bernstein musical, also written by Dorothy Parker, amongst Lillian Hellman, mm-hmm. People that we barely heard of. That's Voltaire's birthday. 1988, it's the birthday of Adolf Marx. Y'all know who he is, right? Yeah, Adolf Marx is better known as Harpo.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was Adolf, Groucho was Julius, Milton was Zeppo, and I forgot who Chico was, Leonard. Anyway, Adolf was Harpo. He was the silent one. He made that sound. So 1934, Anything Goes opened at the Alvin Theater, which is now the... oh my God! With Ethel Merman and William Gaxton and Victor Moore. It ran for a year, and in 1934, that was a long time to run. That's a Cole Porter musical.
Tickets were $8, probably.
Well, probably less, because yeah. And I've talked about it on this show in somewhere in the early '80s when the Liza Minnelli's act opened. People were all up in arms because her tickets were the highest prices on Broadway. It was $20. That's in my lifetime. In 1983, it was the opening of the musical Doonesbury by Gary Trudeau and Liz Suedos. Didn't do well, but it ran for 104 performances at the Biltmore. And in 1999, the show Putting It Together with Bronson Pinochet, Ruthie Henshaw, George Hearn, and Carol Burnett.
Sondheim.
Yeah, it is a review of Sondheim. Very good. I didn't know that until I read it. It was produced, of course, by Cameron McIntosh.
Well, it's based on his song in Sunday in the Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes, true. Sunday in the Park with George Do we know anybody that's done that recently?
Miss Jill Blackwood was phenomenal in it.
I am currently working with one of the two of the actors from Sunday in the Park with George, Miss Sarah Marie Curry.
Yes.
And Miss Mariella Denson. So they're quite good. Anyway, 2011, this is Evita. No, I don't think so. But they're talking about Evita. Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin started An Evening with Patti LuPone and Mandy Patinkin. Did anybody see that when it came through here?
Mm-mm. No.
It was not good.
Oh.
Well, they did not acknowledge each other. They may have been in two separate shows on separate sides of the... And it wasn't until the very end and they sang some stuff from Evita that they even looked at each other. It was very weird. Huh. Birthdays, Marlo Thomas, 1937, Lorna Luft in 1952, and Cherry Jones, who we were just talking about, 2 years older than me, at 1956.
She was the original Sister Aloysius in Doubt.
She was.
Yes.
That's right. We talked about it. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, that's it for today in theater history, and we're going to go out. Hold on. You know what? I'm going to make sure we do the right thing. this is from Candide, and it's called I'm Easily Assimilated. We'll be right back.
It's easy, it's ever so easy.
Support comes from Ground Floor Theater's production of Fun Home. Fun Home is based on the graphic memoir by Alison Bechdel and introduces her at three different ages, revealing memories of her dysfunctional family which connect with her in surprising ways. Fun Home plays December 6th through December 22nd. For more information and tickets, groundfloortheater.org.
Fun Home. That sounds like a good show.
It is.
It just sounds like a good show. I don't know anything about it. Groundfloortheater.org. It is going to be a pretty amazing show. We have an amazing cast, and we're doing it 3/4 round, very similar to the way they did it in New York at Circle in the Square. We also have, and they'll be on the show in a few weeks, the woman playing Joan is deaf, and we're playing the character as a deaf character.
Wow.
So that's pretty amazing.
Cool.
And yeah, and that actress, Sandra May Frank, who's just really, really, really wonderful. We just love her. So, but we're not here to talk about Fun Home, are we? We're here to talk about The Mystery of Edwin Drood by Rupert Holmes. As a reminder, we have Rick Romer, Joe Blackwood, Lynn Kenning, and Marie Falgren here from Austin Playhouse to talk about it. Very quickly, and before we go back to the show, the Edwin Drood was set to open this weekend.
November 16th.
And now it's opening next weekend.
Yes.
Why is that?
Yeah, so on November 3rd, our lovely box office manager, Cindy Williams, who we so love, had an unfortunate run-in with a sewage pipe that had broke above the theater. And so we took some days to recover that with Blackmon mooring and clean up the mess. But because of this, we had to postpone, of course, rehearsals, find new spaces. And then a few days after that, found out we had to actually push our whole opening date a whole week. So... a lot of flexibility happening with the cast and everyone, and we're getting our theater back together. We had to build a whole new stage. We tore out the whole stage, new sheetrock.
It looks great in there. I'm amazed at how quickly all that came together.
So fast. Within like a week, we had all of that stuff back up. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Next week, when y'all do open, it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah, it'll be so beautiful. And we're going to have performances this weekend on Saturday, the 24th and 25th. Mm-hmm. And then our grand opening, our party we usually have, will be on November 30th.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, it's good. We have such a dearth of theater space here. I had to make sure I was using the word in the correct way. That whenever anything happens to a theater space here, our whole community does a collective deep breath. And so we're glad that Austin Playhouse is able to come out from that. Sometimes things like that can be devastating to the organization, and I'm glad that it's not for this.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
So, Mystery of Edwin Drood, y'all are going to do prepare to sing a little bit from this, are you not?
I think so.
Yes, we have the character of Drood and Jasper. We have a duet.
It's early in the show. I play Drood's uncle, and this is the acknowledgement of what great friends and family we are.
Okay.
Two kinsmen.
Under the heading of We Show People How We Make the Sausage Here, and I forgot to tell you this beforehand, if you are belting, If you get to that belt, Seb, I ask you to physically step away from the microphone a little bit. These mics can't handle it.
Gotcha.
I'll just stand back the whole time.
I'll just stand back. This is there a you very go. Belting song. Yeah.
That being said, this is Jill Blackwood and Rick Romer doing a number from Austin Playhouse production of The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Ready, guys? Here I go.
My dearest Uncle Jack.
My dearest nephew Ned.
A life without your friendship would be life as good as dead.
The winds of hell may blow, but as you well may know, I'll heed the call, no need to smile and face the fire below. For you,
for you,
for you,
for you, two kinsmen more than brothers, we know no next of kin, and yet we know no others close beneath the skin. The blood that flows between us, the bonds that tie us twain, two kinsmen when all others flee.
Nephew Ned.
My dearest Uncle Jack, if men say words against you, I would make them take them back. A loyal lad am I, who'd be but glad to die, if by my death one extra breath of life for you I'd buy. Tis true,
tis true,
for you,
for you,
two kinsmen more than brothers, we know no next of kin, and yet we know no others close beneath the skin. The blood that flows between us, the bonds that tie us twain, two kinsmen when all others flee, then we remain. 'Tis true,
'tis true,
for you,
for you,
two kinsmen are we two.
I had to look at you to make sure that was the end. That is so great. That is so much fun. And that is the feel of the whole show.
It is.
Almost. Forgive me if I... there are indeed, I would assume, there are some times where we bring it down and we get more ballady, yes?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Yeah, there's quite a mix.
And Jill and Rosa Budd, Perfect Strangers, is probably one of the most beautiful songs in the show as far as a ballad.
And the ever-popular Moonfall, that's the song that a lot of people know Moonfall, from the show. But Perfect Strangers, be on the lookout for that one as well. It's gorgeous.
It's such a fun show. So what would you say to people if they, they're on the fence, they're not sure whether they want to come see it? What are you going to say to these people?
I would say, and one of the biggest things is that it's, you know, I think some audiences get freaked out when they say, oh, audience participation, but it's different this time. They actually get to vote, and they actually do... And we do whatever they vote on. I mean, whatever they vote on, how they want it to end, and we play that.
But I also think it's pretty fun for families. Yes. I mean, I have two boys,
kids would love
15 and 10, and I just know that they're already 15 and 10.
I'm sorry, Jill. I remember when you had your kids. I'm going,
I know,
no, that's impossible.
They're taller than me now. But anyway, I'm excited for them to see it because they will just get a huge kick out of that about seeing. You know, those moments where you kind of break the fourth wall and where they get to vote and see what the ending is.
And this is pretty much of a, just a second, no, Lynn, okay. This is pretty much of a family, you can bring the kids.
I mean, there absolutely. Are, yeah, yes. I mean, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything.
No, you could bring kids to this. No, absolutely. They'd be fun. Absolutely. They'd have a great time.
I was just going to say, too, I think when you hear the term audience participation, audiences are afraid that they're going to be, like, made fun of, or they're going
to... No, they don't have to do anything.
It's not that. It's more like going over to a really good friend's house and just hanging out.
Like a party.
It's very
It's like playing Pictionary.
You won't be asked to get on stage or say anything out, but you get to... Have your voice heard.
It's also a fun story. It's just a really fun story.
It is fun also, and I don't know if you were doing it the same way as they did it at 54, but your section of the audience has you have a little team feel, at least.
Yes.
Before the show starts, you have your cast member that comes over and talks to you.
Right.
And you sort of feel like, oh, these are my people. This little group in the theater is my group. And that's...
As a matter of fact, the opening number, there you are, with four characters, Jill and I both, we're in the audience. We talk about sitting on their laps, and we mentioned people in the audience. I mean, it's just fun for them.
Yeah. Well, it has been can't talk. It's been so much fun having you on the show. You'll have to promise to come back where you can come and join us backstage, and we can learn a little bit more about
Absolutely.
You guys, since we're not having a backstage. So when does the show open?
It opens
November 24th.
24th and 25th this Saturday and Sunday.
Uh-huh. Those are preview performances.
Preview performances. Sure. The 24th. the 30th is the official grand opening through December 15th. It's Thursday through Saturday at 8 and Sundays at 5 with a special 2 p.m. matinee on the Saturday the 15th.
Great. Do you know if you're doing any kind of ASL interpreted performances or anything like that?
Talkbacks?
Nope.
That I don't know.
My sister's an ASL interpreter, so perhaps I should.
We should talk to her.
Yes.
Yeah. So where can folks go to get more information about the show?
Well, for tickets, they can call 512-476-0084 or go to austinplayhouse.com. Great. And if they would like to just check out the material and the show and see if they have dates that are work with their schedules.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Well, great. That was Jill Blackwood, Rick Romer, Lynn Kenning, and Marie Falgren. I didn't write. I'm doing yours by memory. It's not easy. With Austin's Playhouse production of The Mystery of Edwin Drood, or Drood, both by Rupert Holmes, November 24th through December 15th at the Austin Playhouse at Highland. For more information, you may visit austinplayhouse.com. We will be right back.
I've come to town.
Okay, we are back. This is Lisa Sheps at Offstage and On Air. We have a boisterous group still here.
Sorry.
I want to thank you guys just stepping into your other role as being my wonderful co-host. Thank you.
Oh, it was super fun. Thank you.
So reminder, we have no backstage at Offstage today, so we will be going straight into, whether you're listening on the terrestrial radio, we Austin Monitor News is next. If you're listening on the podcast, you're done after this. So there you go. Remember, folks, please like us on Facebook, tweet us on Twitter, do all that stuff that you do with social media. We podcast this puppy. You can get it sent directly to your mailbox by going to offstageonair.com, putting your email address in the little box, and we'll send it directly to you. Or you can get it through iTunes. If you do the podcast, and you should, you'll be able to hear Backstage at Offstage, where we learn a little bit more about our guests, not necessarily the shows that they're talking about, but we learn what makes them tick, why they got into the theater. We have so much fun at Backstage at Offstage. So with that, I want everybody to have a good Thanksgiving and eat a lot of turkey. Watch football if that's your thing. Watch the Macy's Parade if that's your thing. Or don't do anything if that's your thing. I have to tap dance here because I didn't have the music set up right. This is called Thank You and Good Night from the Marvelous Wonderettes, and that's because I'm giving thanks for you guys, my wonderful audience. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Thank you.